So today's FAQ session, if I remember rightly, is on population and what socialists should be saying about this. I had a look at the subject earlier today just to see what the current situation is, and overall the global population is expected to rise to from about 7 billion today to 9.7 billion in by 2050, but is expected to peak by 11 billion by the end of the century. But weirdly, at the same time, the world's population is growing older due to increasing life expectancy, and also fertility levels are falling almost everywhere. And the number of countries experiencing with falling populations is increasing. I think it's around about 55 countries have now got falling populations, and birth rates are falling. So the increasing population it's not straightforward. It's not just live births. It's also it's in this context of lower fertility. Half of the projected growth of the global population up until 2050 is going to be in just 9 countries, which are sub-Saharan countries, India, Indonesia, and actually the United States. Whereas other countries with large populations like China and Japan are seeing declining populations. So it's quite a complex figure that you have to actually sort of look in. There's more than one pattern going on. I've in the Socialist Party, I've over the years heard various things argued. One being that there is no population problem, that every time anyone's ever warned of a population problem in the past, from Malthus downwards, they've been proved wrong. There's been a green revolution in the 1970s. There'll probably be another green revolution of some sort in the future. So this is a problem that's a non-problem, as far as some socialists have argued. And in fact, there is another aspect to this question which makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and which explains why, according to David Attenborough anyway, there's a taboo around the subject. The term climate summits are almost always silent on the question of population growth. And the taboo is for obvious reasons. One only has to look at the history of the 20th century to see what has... some of the worst results of attempts in social engineering. So because nobody really wants to revisit that question or the dire implications of it, it's arguable that there people just don't want to discuss the subject. But socialists are not in the business of taboos. We're not in the business of avoiding subjects, especially where they concern the future of the human race. So it really is up to us to get our ducks in a row and establish exactly what it is that we need to say to people. Is there a population problem, or is it not a problem? Or if it is a problem, what are the proposed solutions to it? A lot of people I've talked to seem very confused about the question of population, and partly I think it's the taboo around the subject that is aiding that confusion. Most people seem to think that population is massively rising and that it's the main problem causing climate change. It's the main problem that needs something doing about, but of course they don't really want to expand on that because that takes them to some quite uncomfortable places. But it does seem to be a huge prejudice among people, and it really is. And rather one-sided arguments I've also seen amongst socialists as well. So this session is all about us working out what's the What's the smart thing to say to people? So, anybody want to kick off?
Expression that was being used way back in the 70s when overpopulation was, the idea of overpopulation was much more prevalent than now, actually, was the population explosion. I think that expression is rarely heard now. People still talk about overpopulation, but they don't use the sort of votive term that population explosion was. There's no doubt the population hasn't gone up, although it's gone up since the 70s, hasn't gone up anything like as much or as fast as was being predicted then. The whole point, as I think socialists should see it, is that it's not any growth in population, which there may be, and as you said, Paddy, there almost certainly will be in the next few decades, that's the problem. Because why would there be too many people? There'd only be too many people if there were enough resources. But it's absolutely clear from all sorts of sources that there are enough resources in terms of food, clothing, housing, and so on to satisfy whole of the Earth's population as it currently stands. There are a couple of articles in this month's Socialist Standard which sort of emphasize that point and evidence to support it. And so there's that side of things. The other comment I'd like to make is on this idea that there are too many people and that somehow the population could be lower. And there's no reason why the population should rise to the extent that it is at the moment. And in fact, in a sort of more advanced world, in a more developed world, in a more economically and socially developed world, it almost certainly wouldn't. But, there's this idea, it makes people uncomfortable, that to talk about overpopulation is to be racist, because places where populations are going up mostly is, as you've said, Sahara, Africa, India, Indonesia, etc. Some of us here will have seen the film Michael Moore produced film. A number of us watched it on this channel several weeks ago. Planet of the Humans. And there was one small section in that film. It's been slammed for various reasons. A lot of them, in my view, invalid. But there's one small section in this film where you get an academic to speak. He speaks, it's only about 3 minutes, of the fact that a rising population is causing a real problem in terms of resources, etc., and something's got to be done about it. And that was picked up by lots of critics as racist. It's a tiny part of the film. In fact, when Michael Moore was asked to comment on criticism to the film, saw that video as well, he sort of pushed it away. He clearly wasn't comfortable with it and said, he didn't think population was a problem. So I think we should face that anyway and, be as upfront as we can in saying that the best thing is to have a smaller population, is for population not to go up to the extent that that it is at the moment. But the only way to resolve that is to have to look forward to a more developed social system, which will almost certainly lead to a lower population. That anyway, the reality is that there is enough to go around. It's just that the way society is organized that prevents that from happening.
Right,
finish now for the moment.
Thanks, Howard. Yeah, I certainly agree that the usual population argument is just a racist argument, but it's also a cop out, isn't it? Because it's a way of just blaming everybody else for the state of the world. You know, it's not my fault. There's just too many people in the world. But you can always sort of read the subtext. They mean too many black people in the world. You know, they don't mean too many Swiss people in the world, or 2 billion people in their hometown in the world. So, but just taking up your other argument, I mean, we know, don't we? Yes, you're right, that there is enough food being produced in the world now to give every person, I think it's 2,800 calories or something. It's the average average adult daily requirement for an adult male, and we produce enough to give everyone that diet, which in effect would make most people fat, and that's the case now. But we saw, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago from that that film, The Need to Grow, that the claim they made in that film is that there's only 60 years lifetime left in the world's agricultural soils because of the rate of intensive farming. So arguably there's enough, this food is being produced in unsustainable ways, which is going to exhaust the soils of the planet. I haven't actually seen any sort of independent corroboration of that that rather alarming fact, incidentally, but in either case, it's quite obvious that there's an upper limit to what a finite world can stand in terms of population. So I kind of agree with you that it would probably be the best argument that we could be putting forward is to say that yes, in socialism, there we should look at a sustainable population, and it probably would be smaller than the one we've got now.
I think, excuse me, I think as with just about every problem and crisis that exists at the moment, it can all be traced back to the same sort of common denominator, and that is the social system that we all have to endure, and that's capitalism. You know, everything, it's not so much that we have too many people, although, you know, maybe we have too many people for capitalist modes of production. In other words, capitalism and its unmitigating kind of quest for profit only needs so many people, and it's needing fewer and fewer people to produce the same amount of things. So therefore, it appears as though it's the population that is the issue. In other words, there is this sort of reserve army, as we sometimes refer to, in terms of employment needs and service the system and the mode of production that exists throughout. With technology improving all the time and it taking fewer and fewer people, that translates to the fact that we have too many people. Now, yes, we may have too many people to serve the current modes of production, and the type of production. You know, everyone that is in employment working typically 40, 50 hours a week, 5 or 6 days a week. If that was shared out more people would have more things to do, but it would take less time to do it, and so the numbers would be more sustainable. There would be more free time, there would be more leisure time. And I'm sure we could strive to create enough produce to be able to meet the survival needs of the future generations. So, you know, therein lies the problem. The problem is not so much the amount of people, but the amount of people that it takes to run the system. Which gives a false impression or an illusion that that the cause of the problem is the too many people taking too many resources, and the type of production that we're trying to sustain is so kind of inconsistent and so precarious that it's almost impossible in the current situation to be able to calculate just how much people need accurately or with any degree of accuracy, and such is the nature of why we end up with surpluses. And even in last month's Standard, we were reflecting on a copy of the Standard 50 years ago, 1970s, when so many countries were being paid to store food and to stop production. there was more than enough to go round, but in order to keep prices artificially high, farmers were paid to store it. So, you know, there are all these kind of mitigating and inclusive factors that make it appear as though there's too many people, but the underlying issue is not the population, but the system that we live in that is the problem, rather than the people or the quantity of people.
Well, I think that's a view that we can agree with. The question is how to get that across to other people.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the idea would be to try and trim that down a bit, get it into some sort of summary, but keep focused on the fact that it is the system rather than the amount of people that are the issue. In other words, there may be too many people to meet current demands, or so it appears, but within socialism, there would be enough people to share the workload, and there would be far less people redundant. There would be more people needed to do the things required, and we certainly could, with technology, be able to sustain the current levels, and if necessary, there would be a world, there may be a glut of people at the moment, but we would have to consider taking a uniformed approach to reproduction, and maybe encourage people to attempt to produce, you know, have smaller families. I mean, in China, the incentive is, you know, the one family rule, although I think that's been relaxed a bit in recent years. But there's a financial incentive there for that to be the case. In other words, the bigger the family you have, or the more children you have, you're actually going to be worse off. And so people are paid to have fewer children. Whereas in socialism, the idea would be that people would be much more mindful and cooperative towards producing more children. If it was felt that there really was difficulties in sustaining the worldwide population, but I suspect that when we do produce and we can produce enough food to adequately meet the needs of most people the world over, that would be far less of an issue.
Okay, well, this this sort of threatens to get us into the area of precisely of social engineering that makes most people nervous. If we start to suggest that socialism would be encouraging or attempting to control birth rate in some way, that might be us shooting ourselves in the foot. But in fact, I think that we don't necessarily need to do that. If anybody's seen any interviews or talks by David Attenborough, who's a great advocate of the population problem and has been denigrated by some socialists because of it. But what he actually says is that, and I'll quote this directly from a short YouTube video. You can see these YouTube videos. You can see him making his case. And he says, wherever women have the vote, wherever they're literate and have the medical facilities to control the number of children they bear, the birth rate falls. And his larger argument is that if you look at most of the countries where the birth rate is increasing, where the population is increasing, they're Muslim countries. And typically, the women in those countries don't have the vote. They often don't have the access to education, and they certainly don't have access to the medical facilities to control their own birth rate. These things are controlled by the men in those societies. So they don't have, so the women are not in control of their own fertility. I mean, this wouldn't be the case in socialism, so I think it would be fairly easy for us to point to these facts and that are known in capitalism and say, well, once women have the power of their own fertility, as we can see in capitalism, the birth rate always tends to fall. So this would happen in socialism.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I was trying to say, but not in so many words, and not particularly well. In other words, it would be a natural phenomenon because we wouldn't have all the vices that exist within capitalism or under capitalism. Within socialism, it would be a natural phenomenon. In other words, it would balance itself out almost by default, would be the long-term thing. But what I'm trying to say as well, that if the worst-case scenario was that suddenly there was an explosion over a typical generation, 25, 30, 40 years, whatever, then it would be equally natural and not to coerce or cajole people into producing less and having fewer babies, fewer children. But I think if there was a general acknowledgement and agreement cooperatively, you know, let's say 100 years from now we have socialism, that it was felt that the population rate was unmanageable, I think that people would naturally be inclined towards trying to work voluntarily and cooperatively towards producing and having less children, probably through some sort of someone help me here, contraceptive methods kind of thing is what I'm looking for. But that's way down the line. I just feel that, you know, because of all the influencing factors under capitalism that wouldn't exist within socialism, we would have a much more balanced population and the ability to meet the needs of that population, which would be probably relatively stable and arguably go down within, say, 100 years of the establishment or even less of socialism. Once it was firmly established, then the world population, I think, would inevitably stabilise.
If you look at the world, it's based on scarcity at the moment. You've got probably billions of people living in shanty towns without proper access to healthcare, and you're doing terrible things. Right? I mean, you can't give everybody an American lifestyle thing in the world, you know, but you can sort out healthcare and proper housing for people and food for people, and then hopefully. People can have little bits of luxury, but you can't give everybody a Western lifestyle in the world at the moment, really, you know.
There was a book that was popular in the 1970s called The Limits to Growth. And it was sort of doom-laden. It argued that if economies grew to the extent they were in the 70s, by the end of the century, things would be impossible to manage, that no more growth would be possible because the earth would be utterly and completely exploited. Well, obviously that didn't happen, futurology always sort of it's unreliable. You can't tell what changes there are going to be in the next 5 or 10 years, let alone the next 30 or 40. But nevertheless, I would agree with what Paddy said earlier, that it seems unlikely that in a socialist society, growth could continue in the way it is now. In other words, because as Dougie just suggested, it would be difficult even in socialism to give everybody in the world kind of lifestyle which quite a few people in the Western world have got. Okay, but the question arises, would it be necessary? This is part of a discussion socialists, I think, and you know, the question of whether in a socialist society people would continue to eat meat, etc., arises too, because obviously a vast amount of resources is needed to produce that. It doesn't do the environment any good either. As somebody put it, you know, what capitalism is doing at the moment is turning what is left of nature into profits. So, I mean, all that I think needs to be thrown into the argument as well, that resources aren't actually endless, and socialists have never said that. They aren't endless. What we need to sort of be thinking about is the rational use of the resources there are. Definitely not, you know, not used rationally in capitalism. They're used sort of, you know, entirely for profit and to hell with the environment.
Yes, I think that's right. I think sometimes when we talk about population, well, global population, and how, you know, the world can feed, you know, all these people at the moment, I think there's a kind of averaging assumption that we tend to unconsciously make. We just assume unconsciously that, you know, everybody's like us, but of course they're not like us, are they? As Dougie said and Howard said. You know, there's a massive inequality in access to resources across the world, and the majority of the world just simply can't have the kind of Western consumption that we've got. They can't have the central heating and the air conditioning and the power consumption and the meat three times a day. So in socialism, the big struggle would be to equalise things so that people around the world could have, roughly speaking, the same access to resources. Well, what would that mean if they can't? We couldn't bring the rest of the world up to Western standards. There's only one other option, as I see it, that the Western or advanced capitalist countries and the people in them would have to think about how to reduce their consumption. Now, how would that work? And how would we make a case for that in our socialist argument? Would we be arguing, as one member once called it, a hair shirt capitalism, socialism rather, where we all sort of we all eat brown rice and wear sandals and go around with long hair beating our breasts and doing without for the sake of the world. Well, that was just a cartoon version, but there is a grain of truth in that you know, do we need to be arguing that in advanced capitalist countries of now, people would have to consider seriously reducing their general consumption? What do people think about that? I mean, that some members think that's a complete vote loser and we shouldn't go there.
I think we certainly have to. We certainly can't sort of paint this sort of picture of a world, you know, creating this sort of utopian argument. I just don't think that's realistic. I think we would have to accept that we in this country and elsewhere, America, that sacrifices would have to be made. You know, I think that the whole "I'm all right, Jack" attitude would eventually disperse over time within, you know, countries like ours, and a greater sense of well-being for all. You know, the greater good would start to exist, and that would have to involve some sacrifices. I mean, you know, getting back to the whole meat thing again, I don't think anyone would expect to be living on fabulous steaks three or four times a day. I don't think everyone would be expecting to live in luxurious accommodation in castles and the likes. I think we have to be perfectly sensible, rational and realistic about it. You know, there's no point in being delusional or trying to delude people into believing that everything's going to be perfect. There's every likelihood that the sort of luxuries compared to the current standards that exist, that we experience now in this country, that don't exist elsewhere, sacrifices would have to be made. You know, some people would have to take a drop in the standard of living in order to help raise people out of the sort of squalor that they currently have to endure under capitalism.
I don't think that hair shirt socialism is any more attractive than tuck shop socialism. And I think what we need to do is to get beyond either of those and instead raise questions about the way that we relate to objects. Now, I mean, there's obviously a massive, massive pressure in capitalism to persuade people that they need to own stuff and more stuff. And it's not clear to me that in a rational, reasonable socialist society, there would be that degree of ownership. Do we all need to own our own television, our own dishwasher, our own washing machine, our own cooker, our own set of spanners? All of these things could be shared. And the consequence of that is that you use massively fewer resources from the world if they're shared. And they're just available as people need them, which is not every minute of the day. So, I mean, those are possibilities that I think can be explored and put forward to people who are worried about not being able to eat four steaks a day. God, I don't think I've met anybody who wants to eat four steaks a day. I certainly don't. Anyway, that's a thought.
No, that's a terrific way of putting it. That's a good, sound, solid argument. I think that most people could deal with that.
Well said, Keith. A good point. We have always, the party has always said that socialism would be a society of abundance, not a society of superabundance. People wouldn't be able to have exactly what they wanted. I've had the argument thrown at me, what if in a socialist society I wanted a spaceship built to go to the moon? The answer to that is you couldn't have one, quite simply. It wouldn't be feasible. You'd have to do without it. And the reality is some people would have to do without some of the things they wanted or thought they wanted, but obviously not the things that prevented them from having enough food to eat or having a roof over their heads or clothes to wear, etc. Those are the really important things. And, you know, imagine 1 year the apple crop failed throughout the planet and there were no apples. And a lot of people who like apples, they couldn't have apples that year. They'd have to have pears or plums or something like that. I mean, and that could apply in lots of areas.
I'll trade in my steaks for apples any day.
Well, you mentioned apples, but I mean, let's think about the staples a minute. Let's think about things like wheat and rice. And the way that they're produced at the moment is by gigantic monocropping. And as we know, monocropping has a fatal flaw, which is that if one crop gets a disease, they all get it right across the world. And so you could have global famine as a result of that. Now, the way out of that is diversifying the crops. And it's been shown, I think Janet Silman writes some interesting articles on this. It's been shown that small holdings actually produce per acre better output and a more sustainable output. Than monocropping. But of course, then you've got the difficulty of collection and distribution from small holdings, which monocropping, large scale agriculture has kind of solved. So you've got this kind of factory agriculture system that is very good for production and distribution globally, but you've got this massive drawback. And socialism for sustainability would really presumably have to break up these kind of gigantic agri farms, mm-hmm. and go the opposite direction. But then that involves much more local production. So that's another thing that we would need to look at.
I think Howard made a really good point there as well when he happened to mention the whole idea of sending rockets to the moon and, I want to visit the moon. You know, I think it's all about a sense of priority as well. I mean, obviously, technologically, I think we have to be congratulated as a species for having achieved the ability to reach the moon. But then, you know, we simply cannot cure the, you know, we've got people dying of starvation and hydration, or rather the lack of it in the world, and yet we're still sort of sending people to the moon. And, you know, that sort of thing, I think, within socialism would have to take second place. You know, yes, we would have to adapt technically for the benefit of all. But this idea of doing these kind of weird and wonderful things, like saying that would have to take second place to meeting the needs of the human race.
Yeah, I mean, there's also another aspect to global consumption of resources, which usually gets overlooked or forgotten in the population discussion. David Attenborough, he's aware of it, but he doesn't make much of it, and that's the class aspect of it. That's the fact that consumption rises with income, so that as you probably know. The consumption and global and carbon impact of one American is equal to that of 20 Ethiopians, and a European is equal to 15 Ethiopians in that sense. So this is something else that I think that needs to be built into our class analysis of capitalism. But of course, the problem with that is that as workers in advanced capitalist countries, we actually get the benefit of this compared to people in the third world. So it looks as it can look like a sort of nationalistic argument about how we're exploiting the third world, which isn't a that's not the view we take. But individually, as members in the advanced capitalist countries, we do benefit from this inequality.
I always remember, to go back to the same era, to the early 70s, but I remember a socialist standard which was all about technology, when technology was sort of really coming to the fore, and there was a issue of the socialist standard, and there were various articles about various things, and there was one article written by a member who's no longer around called Ron Cook. Some of us here would have known him, and the title of the article, which summed up so much, was "Progress Perverted," and it says so much about all sorts of things that were happening then. Have happened since. Capitalism has allowed enormous progress to be made in the production of all sorts of things, all sorts of goods, all sorts of services, but it's the way it distributes them and the way it and the way it uses them, they often which converts that progress. I think that's those two words, those two alliterative words, I think, sum up very effectively the effect of capitalism on humanity.
There's an aspect which hasn't really been talked about yet, which is often comes up when people are talking about a population problem, which is the effect on other species on the planet, and the fact that the more humans there are, basically, less room there is for other animals. And I don't know what the party view is on that, but if it has one.
Well, it's all part of destruction of the environment, I think, is the way to look at that. Just as the logging in the Amazon and so on destroys the environment, so does the turning of land in all sorts of parts of the world to the detriment of other creatures destroy the environment. So, I mean, that's something which to a large extent was dealt with in that film the film I mentioned before, the Michael Moore film, and the point being made there was that the green lobby has got in bed with corporate capitalism, allow them to do that. If they even though they're using another means to do it. It isn't preventing it from happening.
I've been in the past quite surprised by the attitude of one or two members to this, which is that the Socialist Party is about the emancipation of the human race, that we are, by virtue of our, you know, superior abilities and brain and so forth, the undisputed masters of the world, and that therefore the world is there for us to use. It's there at our disposal. Almost as if really it doesn't matter that much about these other animals, and you know, the world is really for us to use or abuse as we see fit. But I don't think that that's a common view amongst socialists. At least I hope it's not. I think a much more common view of socialists is that our responsibility is equal to our power in the world, and our responsibility as the human race is to be sensible and responsible custodians of the world's species and biodiversity. I think that's something that's important to emphasise, because it gives us a way into the environmental argument. It gives us something that we've got in common with the environmentalists, a point of departure for discussion. So it doesn't mean that all party members need to be vegetarians, but it does mean that a sense of global responsibility for nature is or should be part of the socialist case.
Yeah, well said.
I think in responding to how we answer the population control is that we can observe that in affluent countries, that's where people are choosing to have fewer children. And in the poorer countries, that's where people are choosing to have more children. And so in terms of people controlling their own population of their own accord without rules and regulations, could be to make sure people are fed and housed properly. Because when they're affluent, they have fewer children. They have more to do, but it may not be so much in as far as consuming a lot, but it could be in terms of people feeling secure in their having homes and enough to eat, access to culture, travel, maybe.
What does anyone think about the argument that although population is not the biggest or most pressing environmental problem, it is a multiplier of all the other problems?
I was blooming waffling away there, picking up on a point that Dan made, and I realised I'm still on mute. I'll just try and backtrack on what I was saying, and that was in terms of, you know, when people are more gainfully employed, more distracted and doing more things out with their own kind of intimate relationships. The point I was making was, as things are at the moment and the experience we're having with this lockdown things, that's why they sort of expected that in the next sort of 7 or 8 months, there's going to be this kind of population explosion, because couples have got so little to do that they're spending more time doing what couples do. Whereas, pardon me again, when the time comes and socialism is there, people will have more things to keep themselves busy, rather than the other thing that inevitably leads in pregnancy. Now, it might sound a bit extreme, a bit of a long shot, but I think there's some sort of grain of truth in that kind of approach to the subject as well, you know. That really is a bit of a long shot, isn't it?
I don't think there's any doubt that in a socialist world, people would be less inclined to consume. They would have other things to do. They would have other socially useful things to do, which would make it less likely that they would simply want stuff all the time. Accumulating stuff all the time is a sure sign of, it's a sign of alienation, which we would hope a socialist society would diminish, if not do away with completely.
Yeah. So what was that other thing that you were asking about, Paddy? Would you repeat that again, please, Nick?
The point was made by David Attenborough makes this point, that population is not necessarily the biggest environmental problem or the most pressing, but it is a multiplier of all the other problems. But it's one that is being overlooked at the moment in the climate debate because he thinks it's a taboo subject.
And I suppose it's many ways. It's not like the theory of relativity, you know, the butterfly effect, whereby something has an impact on something else, and there's the whole sort of domino effect. There's no doubt about it. Humans encroaching on land unique to certain species. I mean, one of the things that absolutely destroyed me in that Michael Moore film, The Planet of the Humans, was trying to describe it just now makes me feel quite tearful when you see that orangutan just clinging on for dear life up a single solitary tree left over after man's kind of destruction of it in the search for profit. You know, you can't do one thing, you know, within reason without it having an impact on another. And if you keep scaling that up, then gradually the problem becomes worse and even more exaggerated.
I mean, talking about extinctions, I mean, human beings are responsible for the most extinctions in the world, probably, right, over the years, right? I mean, I had an anecdotal thing about the dodo bird. You know, they'd kill one and the other one would come over to see what was happening, and then it would get killed as well, right? Because they weren't the brightest birds in the world. But, I mean, human beings have done that, and they're continuing to do that by decimating forests and things and growing crops for palm oil and stuff like that, right? So there is a problem that capitalism allows this to continue, right? You know, so threatened, right? You know, but with extinction, right? Because of human beings.
And then there's also the impact on other species like tigers and elephants and certain whales in the sea. Minke whales, I think, are in one of the endangered species just now. Bears, tigers, you know, and all these kind of absurd medicinal properties that they're supposed to have in certain cultures. I would like to think that a lot of that will be dispelled and dismissed as people slowly but surely become aware of the stupidity that lies within that kind of within those kind of countries, as they are just now. I think the overwhelming majority of people in the world will realise just how silly some of these things are, but it's a case of the rest of the world and the nation where these things are thought to be revered. Hopefully those countries and their inhabitants will realise the ludicrousy of that.
Yeah, David Attenborough, he comes out with a statistic from the Global Footprint Network, which reckons that over 100 countries there are over 100 countries whose population and affluence are no longer sustainable, which includes almost all the developed countries, and the UK is one of the worst. But he also says that where policy exists on population, like, for example, there's Australia's got a sustainable population minister, but of course there's nothing in the UK. And so he says where policy does exist, it's to actually increase population, to increase birth rate in order to produce workers to look after increasing aging populations, which is a situation he describes as an ecological Ponzi scheme.